Welcome to MicroByte. I'm Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog.
And this show, we'll be talking about Microsoft's Professional Developer Conference. The company's been basking in the afterglow of Windows 7, but this being Microsoft, it wasn't sitting still, and it used PDC to outline what it's got coming and what it's been up to on the internet, in cloud computing, and rich applications. It was a fascinating exercise, not just because of what it's saying where Microsoft was going in terms of standards and interoperability, but also because two of its biggest competitors, Google and Adobe, felt the need to crash the party with their own big announcements. So, with that in mind, in this edition of MicroByte, we'll be asking, Silverlight 4, is it the end of the cross-platform party? Internet Explorer 9, is it our way or the highway? And Azure, from layer cake to pancake, where is Microsoft's revamped cloud going? So, MJ, Silverlight 4, what do you think of that? They announced a big product announcement, a lot of new features in there that a lot of people were looking forward to, and also a lot of stuff that people had actually been waiting for a really long time. A lot of basic bread and butter features such as printing support, clipboard, rich text control, and access to a lot of the local resources on the PC, such as webcams and microphones. I know that they got a lot of cheers from developers in the PDC audience on the mere mention of integration with webcams and microphones on the desktop. It was interesting to note, though, that one of our guys, Tim Anderson, who covered the show, noticed that there's been a subtle move under the covers of Silverlight 4 to make it more optimized towards Windows platforms by tying in some of the COM architecture and optimizing some of the features. The HTML stuff will be more reliant on the Internet Explorer, which is interesting because I know that at a higher level, there's been a lot of talk about Silverlight being a player for different browsers and different operating systems, that you can use it in Safari, you can use it on Mac, you can run it on Linux, and Microsoft has been pretty much down on a lot of that, even if reluctantly. I know it was kind of pulled into some of the cross-platform support, and it took a bit of prompting as well, particularly from the Novell-backed Moonlight project, which puts a version of Silverlight on Linux. But finally, it seems that, as ever, the little Microsoft optimizations, the subtle tie-ins to the Windows operating system, to the COM architecture, to Internet Explorer, are finally starting to rear their heads. I wonder what you kind of thought about that, MJ.
Wow, what an introduction on Silverlight 4. Although you're so right that that was seen at the PDC. I was there this past week, and it was seen as the big announcement, bigger than anything else. Like, it got the most interest. It got the most cheers during the keynote. It had the most questions about it. And they actually, the Silverlight team was the most upfront about what they had, when it's coming. They said they're having the beta this week that's open to anyone who wants to download it. Then there's going to be a release candidate sometime in the next couple months. And then it's going to ship before mid-year. Mm-hmm. Some people even said spring. So they're on a really rapid trajectory with Silverlight 4, and they get a lot of momentum going. But I did see Tim Anderson's piece about, is this the end of the cross-platform Silverlight? And I had a couple of questions about that. One thing I was wondering, and here I'm going to show a little bit of my own ignorance about Silverlight when I say this, but my understanding of Silverlight is, even though it is a cross-browser platform, you still really are talking about different versions of Silverlight for different platforms. It's not really just one thing, is my understanding. So, it's actually slightly different on the Mac. It's slightly different on Linux. It's tailored to the different browsers. And so I'm so used to Microsoft's way that stuff on Windows always works better and different than it does on any other platform, that I'm not surprised that they're going to add stuff that takes advantage more of IE on Windows and may not be available to some of the other browsers.
Microsoft's been happy to let the cross-platform story of Silverlight play out, and it's done very well for them, even if it has done that reluctantly. I think the point of Tim's piece was that it's important to Microsoft from in terms of the taking on the competition, such as Adobe. I know that the Adobe's been pushing pretty hard with Flash and its Air runtime, but that's been operating out of the browser, and this also takes Silverlight out of the browser, but they're doing that in a way that kind of ties you into some of the HTML controls in Internet Explorer on Windows. So in some ways, if you really want to appeal to developers, you didn't want to tie them into one browser. And that's part of the higher debate about how standards compliant is Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was the COM automation as well. I mean, again, COM, it's a Microsoft architecture. It's a Windows-only feature. So increasingly, you're going to see... if you wanted to get developers writing Silverlight applications across different platforms, which is theoretically everyone's into the whole cross-platform argument these days, you hit the most platforms, then automatically, again, Microsoft's kind of like starting to rule itself out of contention for hitting as many platforms as possible, which in the climate of Silicon Valley and the kind of the Ajax crowd and the Google-centric crowd, it's going to lose that mindshare among those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I had an interesting offline conversation with Brad Becker, who is one of the program managers on rich platforms at Microsoft. And after Microsoft announced Silverlight 4, I was watching the Twitter stream, and I saw a lot of people saying, so this is definitely the end of WPF, Windows Presentation Foundation. Like, now Silverlight has everything that you had in WPF almost. So why would anybody write WPF apps? So I asked him about that. And he said, Microsoft's long-term strategy is to make WPF and Silverlight one thing. Mm-hmm. And so, that's not really that surprising, given that Silverlight originally was codenamed WPFE, which was Windows Presentation Foundation mm-hmm. Everywhere. So it's like a subset of WPF, right? But if you think this through, so Microsoft's long-term goal is to have one programming model, and that programming model is going to be Silverlight. But because it's going to ultimately replace WPF, we don't know when, but at some point, that means they're going to have to put some things into it that are right now thought of as Windows things. So that brings up the whole issue. Like, is that what this new COM support is? Is it the first example of them showing their hand that they're going to make Silverlight more like of a Windows platform? And how will that translate when you have a Mac and when you have Linux? Like, will you still see all of these features that you're going to get with Silverlight on Windows, or won't you? Will it be like one of those degrade gracefully things they always talk about, So we don't really know yet, but we do know that this is their long-term strategy, and that's kind of an interesting side point, I think.
Well, if they do try to make Silverlight WPF, the question is how many features can you pack into Silverlight and still let it run? And there's two things come out of this. One is you're going beyond Windows. You're turning it into a kind of a rich internet pseudo, almost meta operating environment, because it's so lightweight and graphical orientated, and that kind of has competitive ramifications in terms of Adobe, and that's where I'm talking. That's where I think Tim's kind of coming from, and at least I'm trying not to speak for him, but it seems to me Tim's coming from in terms of, okay, you start doing the Windows lock-ins, then you're going to lose the developers who might have come over from Adobe. And then the other big question is, of course, is mobile. We've heard a lot of promises about Silverlight on mobile, at least for the last year and a half, 2 years. At one point, that it seemed like that they were even close to bringing out Silverlight for mobile, and yet it still hasn't appeared. And if they pack more features into Silverlight, as if this is the idea, then it's not going to be able to run on mobile. I mean, Scott mm-hmm. Guthrie said at PDC, it appeared to be his one awkward moment on stage, was he talked about the 10-second, 5-megabyte download process, which they still can't reduce or make shorter. And that's not going to work on a handset, and it's going to be even worse if they pack more features into it over time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Like, are we going to move into a situation where there's like subsets of Silverlight, like Silverlight's small, but will there be even an even smaller one that runs on Windows Mobile 7 when it finally comes out? Because they're still saying, they didn't say anything at the show new about Silverlight on mobile, but when we asked them, they said our commitment is still to have it out when Windows Mobile 7 comes out. And they also said at PDC this week that they are going to talk publicly about Windows Mobile 7 at MIX, which is in March. So they didn't say they'd have Windows Mobile 7 out by MIX, because I think there's no way that's ever going to happen. But they're at least going to talk about it. And of course, since it's MIX, at that point, you'd think they're also going to talk about Silverlight on Windows Mobile.
You would think so.
You would think. So I think we'll have to see if we're starting to get into a situation where there's lots of different Silverlights and some are richer than others, or if they've got some way where they can still keep it like one code base and it's just running on all these different platforms, even though they're making it fatter and fatter with features.
Coming back to the competitive aspect, we were listening in on the Google Chrome announcement, which, as I said earlier in the beginning of the show, Google clearly tried to overshadow Microsoft's party. What were your thoughts on this whole competitive aspect, Chrome OS versus Silverlight?
Yeah, it's funny because you can't really right now compare the two as apples to apples, right? Because Chrome OS is an OS and Silverlight is not an OS. But, you know, I saw a lot of people saying, is Chrome OS really an OS or is it a glorified version of the Chrome browser? And, you know, Google itself said one of the main purposes of Chrome OS is to let you run all applications as web applications. So then I'm kind of thinking that through, and I'm saying, well, that's kind of Silverlight too, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how those two things end up competing or don't end up competing. You know, because after I read through all of the stuff on Chrome OS, to me, what it looks like is Linux with a new windowing system and a front end that looks like the Google browser tied to netbooks. So, you know, if it's more than that and it introduces some new kind of capability that really lets you do something unique with applications to make them run in the browser, we don't know exactly how that's going to happen. But if that does happen, then it's kind of like even more Silverlight going head-to-head with the Chrome OS, in my mind at least.
Another interesting aspect was the Moonlight project from Novell. And the fact if Microsoft does indeed tie Silverlight even more and more to Windows over the years, this really creates a gap in the market for Moonlight, and it can finally really shine. Whereas up until now, people have, I think, realistically have thought, well, why bother? What is this project about if Silverlight is the real deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting because I think you're right. You know, people have been a little bit like, why do I need Moonlight? Why would I want Moonlight? You know, and I think, during the Google press conference this week, somebody said, so are you guys going to support Silverlight on the Chrome OS? Mm. And there was a deafening silence there. But maybe they won't support Silverlight. Maybe they'll support Moonlight. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, at its heart, Chrome OS is Linux. So that'll be really interesting if they end up endorsing Moonlight over Silverlight. Or if they just say, we don't even want anything to do with Silverlight, Moonlight, and we're not going to let that happen and not have any kind of a plug-in. Because that was another part of this week's announcement about Silverlight that was I thought was interesting, and they kind of downplayed it. But as of Silverlight 4, Microsoft is officially supporting the Chrome browser with Silverlight. Before it could run, but Microsoft never endorsed it, and now they're saying they endorse that it will run seamlessly on the Chrome browser. Gavin, let's talk about IE9, because I'd say that was the second biggest piece of news out of the PDC. Although, when I say it was one of the bigger pieces of news, we didn't really learn a whole heck of a lot about IE9. We had heard a rumor at the start of the show that Microsoft was going to actually give out the IE9 bits, like a test build. And that quickly came to be seen as untrue, because they told us at the PDC they're only 3 weeks into the IE9 project. But that didn't stop them from having a few things to say. They showed a couple of things about IE9 that they hadn't shown before. They talked about the fact that it's going to be a hardware-accelerated browser, meaning they're no longer going to have IE dependent on GDI. It's actually going to be dependent on DirectX. Mm-hmm. And so as there are advances in the DirectX graphics platform, the browser is going to be able to take advantage of that and have better performance. You know, they didn't give us a lot of details on how is that actually going to happen and how's that all going to work under the covers, but they said it's coming. anyways. And they also talked about the fact they're going to do some things like rounded borders and a couple other niceties in IE9 that people are interested in. The standards part of the conversation was the most interesting. Because, you know, Microsoft keeps saying we're going to make IE, each successive iteration of it, more standards compliant. But they don't always tell you what that means. They said at the show this week that they're going to have more CSS standards compliance with IE9. They also, I thought this was a really interesting thing they did. They showed the results of ACID 3 tests with the first builds, internal builds of IE9. Mm-hmm. And they're only passing 32 of 100 of the ACID tests with IE9, mm-hmm. which, of course, had a lot of people in an uproar like, oh, so they're not really even going to make it more standards compliant. You know, they're saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have HTML5, some of that, and some CSS, and be more ACID compliant. But, you know, Microsoft's been ridiculing, the ACID tests for the past year. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly they're like showing, hey, we're complying with 32 out of 100 of the ACID tests. and I actually had a chance to ask the executives. I'm like, why did you even show that stat when you're doing so poorly? You know, Opera's at 100, Firefox is in the 70s as far as how many tests they're passing. And they said, well, we just knew people would ask, are you going to make it more ACID compliant? So we set a bar. A very low bar, but it's a bar. I guess my thinking is they did that so when the first test build comes out, whenever that is, they're going to be compliant with more than 32. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, see, we're showing you guys we're serious about this. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of like what they said about IE9. They didn't offer any dates. They didn't say when the test build was going to be out. They didn't say when the final was going to come out. They wouldn't even give a year or a month. They wouldn't give any details like that.
I think you make a good point. Yeah, yes, it three thing has become like a sore point for them, and people have always hit them over it. So that's why it was put up there. On the standards, I thought Stephen Sinofsky, who's head of the Windows and the client group, he actually said it was important to have a balance between standards and the real world. And he said, yep, it's important to balance the baseline with innovative technologies. So in other words, I took that to essentially mean Microsoft's going to support the web standards it wants to and ignore those it doesn't want to use. And because it wants to do what Microsoft does best, which is to optimize applications for the operating system or for the stack. In whatever case, in years past, it's been Windows, and that's where it got going so hot water of tuning Java to Windows, and it ended up in a legal fight with Sun. And yeah, that's why it came out with COM and DCOM instead of just like going with everybody else and using Corba. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It seems like they're gonna pick standards they want to adhere to, ignore the ones they don't or they don't suit them, and then they're going to like create what Microsoft calls a first-class browsing experience based on its own underlying technologies. And you're right. I mean, that's why they're using all the DirectX stuff they're dumping GDI, which is its own technology. And Microsoft, and this is where the Silverlight aspect comes in, it's interesting that they will not commit to SVG or Canvas, which are part of the HTML5 spec, which comes from W3C. You know, I've spoken to Dean Hashimovich, who leads Internet Explorer business in the past, and he's kind of acknowledged the importance of graphics in the browser and kind of hedged around SVG and Canvas. But it seems to me it's a kind of not invented here attitude inside Microsoft, which is the priority is graphics will be conveyed in the browser through its own technologies and through also Silverlight. So it's an interesting pick and mix attitude the company has on this subject.
Yeah, the other thing they mean when they say the balance, because this came out a lot when they were developing IE8, is what they're also balancing is their legacy base, right? They still have a ton of people running IE6. And, you know, and everybody complains, like says to Microsoft, you've got to get all these people off IE6 or just cut them off or whatever and stop designing things that'll appease that group. But they can't because a lot of the people running IE6 still are in companies that have policies that where they don't let their users upgrade to the later versions. So they also have this balanced thing going on where they can't really completely comply with all the new standards because they will cut off the applications that build around the browser, they'll cut off access to that. And that's their bread and butter, right, is the corporate market. Mm-hmm. And if they just suddenly go, you know what, we're not supporting IE6 anymore. And sorry if you wrote apps that build on top of IE6, they're just not going to work anymore. They would have a lot of really unhappy big corporate customers on their hands. So that's another thing they mean when they say balance, you know.
Yeah.
The other point, which I didn't bring up when I was first talking about this, is JavaScript, because they also are going to be doing some things to tweak JavaScript performance with IE. And this, again, is another one of those things where Microsoft said, JavaScript performance, that's something that, you know, everyone's paying too much attention to and it doesn't really matter and we're not going to talk about it. And now suddenly they're talking about it again. And there's a video on Channel 9 I haven't looked at yet, but it's a whole video dedicated to some of the tweaks they're making around JavaScript performance in IE9. Mm-hmm. And I want to take a look at that and see if they're actually saying anything at this point about what those are or not. But they've said that's going to happen with the next version too.
Well, it's interesting that Sinofsky talked about the tests that they've been undergoing and how there's now a wash in terms of rendering performance on JavaScript between Instinct Explorer 9 and Firefox 3.6, Chrome 4, WebKit. And pretty much his reading between the lines of what he said was, this is kind of a done deal. Performance, we're going to get there on JavaScript, but then they want to change the conversation from talking about pure speed of the browser to other things such as the graphical rendering and how it renders and those faster features which are going to come through the hardware optimization. So PDC took place a year after the last PDC, which is an anomaly in itself. And at PDC 2008, Microsoft took the lid off something called Azure, or other people call Azure. People settle that one.
Azure, Gavin. Azure.
Azure. Yeah, as I said. a lot of the news on this cloud, shall we call it? Came out a year ago, and during that time, there's been a lot of backwards and forwards on features that are going to be in it, such as the database and SQL services and all kinds of other things, and support for things such as PHP. So Microsoft's chief software architect Ryozi stood up a PDC a year later, and essentially, kind of, my take was said that Azure has been delivered, but it's still not finished. I mean, the billing stuff and provisioning stuff is still yet to be done. But I got the sense there was a big kind of almost anticlimax amongst people, because we knew this stuff was coming, and where was the wow factor? I'm not sure what you kind of thought by that, MJ, what people were telling you down there at PDC.
Yeah, people did think that. Like, a lot of people said, if you've been following along with what Microsoft's been doing around Azure in the past year, there wasn't a whole lot new that they had to say at the show. It was a lot of reiteration of, we told you we were doing this, and we did, and we have some customers, and they're doing this. So I don't know what the big bang was that people thought they were going to have with Azure, because it was more like, okay, we did what we said we were going to do, and here it is. That said, the thing that I took away from the Azure presentation this year compared to how they presented it a year ago was, last year they showed a very ambitious picture when they talked about Azure. It had all these layers. I even call it, and a lot of people at Microsoft called it, the layer cake diagram. You know, they had like the operating system and the database. They had all this level of live services and the live framework, and then they had something called SharePoint services that was going to be layered on top, and then there were these applications at the very top of the cake. And this year, there was no diagram. Mm-hmm. And when I asked around, where's your diagram? Nobody had a diagram. And it turns out the reason they didn't want to have a diagram was a lot of those things that were in the layer cake last year are no longer in the layer cake. And like you said, it's a pancake now. It's not a layer cake. Yeah. Or maybe a crepe, if you want to use a nicer word. Now, if you were going to draw a picture of what does Azure look like, you'd have the Windows Azure operating system, you know, that bottom layer that's Red Dog, that's still there, and all the parts of that are still there. The next layer is SQL Azure, and that's it. That's Azure now. Mm-hmm. All these other level, side things, the side services, .NET services, the live framework, they're out of it. And that doesn't mean they're not going to do them, but they're not doing them as part of the initial rollout of the cloud. And you know, they talked about three new code names around Azure at the show. They talked about something called Project Sydney, mm-hmm. Which is some kind of a new secure IPv6 based gateway that's going to let you connect on-premises servers running running Windows Server to the cloud, running Azure.
Yeah.
Then they talked about this thing called Dallas, which is a new data as a service offering. So people who are using Azure will be able to tap into these third-party developed data sets and use those when they're making applications or doing calculations. And then the piece that was the most pertinent to people who are trying to figure out how to develop for Azure was a piece called the App Fabric. So what App Fabric is a lot of the stuff they took out of the layer cake and they threw it over into this thing called App Fabric. So App Fabric is like the Dublin, the application server Microsoft was working on that was codenamed Dublin. And then they've got this caching technology for .NET, codenamed Velocity. And then the stuff that was known as .NET services, like the service bus and the access control services, all these things are mushed into this thing called App Fabric. And so App Fabric doesn't exist yet. It's in a CTP form that you can get for on-premises today. There's a CTP for the on-premises version today, I believe. And then the one that you're going to want if you're developing for Azure isn't even going to be out in CTP form until sometime in 2010. So, you know, like a lot of people were thinking, okay, you get all this .NET services stuff, and that's what you need if you're going to, you know, use the same .NET programming model that you use now for something you're building for the cloud. But it doesn't exist yet. It's coming. So, yeah, you know, it's like they rejiggered the vision a little bit, and I think that's part of the reason it was so anticlimactic and there wasn't a lot of new stuff to say and a lot of new excitement was because they're trying to actually make Azure something that's a little more tangible and a little easier to actually deliver and make usable to customers.
I mean, why does Microsoft do this every time? You know, I hate the sound of my voice, but it's like, you know, we had this with .NET and NEC. You know, everything was .NET, then it was reset. And there's been other product announcements from Microsoft, such as Dublin as well, before itself contained a whole series of peripheral technologies around it that have been over the period of time collapsed in and removed. And then it's not even to go to Windows Vista, which was kind of like, you know, the big statement, and then things were ripped out from that. You know, what is it about Microsoft? Is it the vision is flawed, or they realize the practicalities? Or what's your take on this, MJ?
I think the vision is always really big at the beginning, right? Like the other product we haven't even talked about where the vision was so big and now it's so different is Oslo.
Yeah.
That could be a whole other podcast topic. But, you know, like when we first heard about Oslo, which was Microsoft's like SOA platform,
yeah.
it was like the biggest thing ever. Like every product was part of it. Everything. It was going to be like this whole redoing of Microsoft's entire server suite, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And now what is Oslo? It's part of SQL Server. So I think they always have these big ideas, like game-changing ideas, and then they take it out to a few customers and they go, oh no, we don't, that's not real, that's not possible, and they redo it.
Are the marketing people in charge of this stuff? Is that what's really going on here?
I don't know. Maybe the marketing people are the ones who make the cake diagram.
Yeah.
You know? Because the first diagram from a year ago, I can tell you, back to Azure, is a very different diagram than if you drew one today.
Yeah, I remember it was very, very layered, and there was lots of services in there. Well, the flips they went through on SQL Server as well, it took a long time, well, a very quick time, actually, for them to decide they'd made a mistake on the original storage fabric of Azure, and they decided you had to give basic people something they were familiar with, which was SQL Server.
Right, right. And, yeah, I mean, to Microsoft's credit, they are listening to what people tell them. Like they show them this and they go, what? You know, we don't want that, you know? So they're being responsive, but it is kind of a case of like, because I feel like because this unit of Microsoft, like the developer division, it's a little more open. Well, actually a lot more open than the Windows division is right now. You're seeing all the gyrations and the twists and turns. And so if you're somebody who wants to really be an early adopter and you've started developing for Azure and you have some test projects on Azure, it's changed quite a bit underneath you in the past year. And it's probably going to change more in 2010 as well.
Wait, that's why it pays never to be an early adopter on Microsoft technologies.
That's true.
What I thought, to their credit, is interesting is the app fabric and the ability to download these images of Windows and take snapshots of them for the future and then deploy them to the cloud later on. So they're kind of banking against the future. The only problem with that is that you have to hope Microsoft will come up with these Windows Server images, because in the past it hasn't done terribly well at saying, here is something big, we'll come out with the details later on, and then never it does. I mean, at the other end of the scale was what they did with Vista. What was it with Vista? It was some it was like all the add-on features that were going to be coming, and for the Ultimate Edition.
Oh yeah, the Ultimate Extras.
Yeah,
yep.
And never materialized. So Windows Server images sound like a great idea, but we'll have to see if they actually come. And the other thing I thought was interesting is the whole integration between Visual Studio 2010 and Azure as well. If that plans out, then credit to Microsoft, because it once again it's managed to tie in the development environment to the runtime environment. Only the runtime this time is the online service cloud, rather than Windows running on the client and the server, which has always been how Microsoft's managed to make things simple and compelling for developers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Back to your point on the virtual images. I thought that was kind of interesting. They really downplayed that at the show, and they said we've got this coming, and it's something a lot of people are really excited about. Mm. I mean, because what it lets you do basically is take legacy apps and put them in these virtual images and run it on the cloud. That's one way you could use it, And so it's like a really good idea, and something that Amazon and others have shown and talked about as well. Mm. But no dates, no details on how or when that's going to be delivered, other than saying that it's going to be a Windows Server role in some way, right? I the whole idea that this would be something really interesting to enterprises, but they don't have any details yet. It also kind of plays into my something I did a post on this week, which is they didn't say anything much at all about the private cloud at the PDC, which is another thing I really thought they were going to talk a lot about, because it's something Microsoft keeps saying, yeah, this is part of our vision, which is you can have choice and you can run things in the cloud or you can run it on premises. And we know what their cloud strategy is, but we don't really know what they mean when they say you can have a private cloud. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really give us a whole lot more details as to what that means or what technologies you'd use to make that happen, other than talking a little bit about this Project Sydney.
Steve Ballmer was noticeable by his absence at PDC. I don't think he ever really goes. But anyway, he certainly wasn't there this show. But he loves developers, doesn't he, as we all know?
He was there in spirit. I heard some people chanting, developers, developers, developers.
Yeah. So he did have his hands full, because they had the Microsoft annual shareholder meeting was this week. So right. And he had to go out and meet the investors, and he got beaten up a little bit there, didn't he? So what we're getting around to here essentially is the Steve Ballmer mood index. What mood's he in? And based on what we saw at PDC, the announcements and the financial analyst meeting, which, as I think you pointed out earlier, he got a bit beaten up over how Microsoft's doing in regards to Apple, and how Apple's still got quite a grip amongst the teenagers and students, which Microsoft still doesn't have. So what do you think? What's the temperature of Steve Ballmer this week?
Yeah, I would say we've said this the past couple of shows, but I still feel like he's being Mr. All Business right now. He's playing up the economy and how people's IT budgets are under duress. And I think he's definitely being all business. We didn't hear or see any monkey boy antics this week. even though it was a developer show week, it was a very all business PDC, really, for the most part. And so I'd say all business. What about you?
Also, yeah, I think he's got himself a little ticking time bomb on his hands as well. I mean, Windows 7 sales have been good. I mean, they've been hitting us a lot of information about how Windows 7 has been outselling XP, but what they're not breaking out is the revenue numbers, and that's not a great surprise when you realize they've done such heavy, heavy discounting to get Windows 7 out there and have people using it. They're going to take a big hit on how much money they earn off of this thing. So he's really banking against the future on Windows 7, never mind how sales are going. So, yeah, I'd say if I was Steve Ballmer, I'd be all business as well, but at this point in the game.
To your point on that, we also don't even know how many copies of Windows 7 they've sold.
Yeah.
We've heard things reported in percentages, like it's X percent of how many they sold of Vista at the same point. But I'd like to see a number. I actually would love to see a number, like how many copies of Windows 7 have been sold, how many were actually paid for.
To anyone who says that Windows 7 is saying X percent more than XP or even Vista, that so many different factors come into play, the times of the year they were launched, the state of the economy. I mean, Vista launched in January, which is never a really good time to buy an operating system because everyone spent all their money at Christmas. The real acid test will be like you say, number of units shipped, and also how it hits the Microsoft bottom line, I think.
Yep, I agree. That said, though, I just bought my Windows 7 PC.
Oh, you're such a Microsoft stooge, aren't you?
I am. I'm a fangirl. But I gotta say, I love it. I'm so happy with it. So far, if anything goes wrong, you'll be the first to know, Gavin.
Anyway, I'm glad you've made Steve Ballmer's second quarter go a little bit better, hasn't it?
Yes, I helped the bottom line.
You have helped the bottom line. You've helped Steve Ballmer's bottom line. How does that make you feel?
A little frightening, actually.
All right,
so anyways, I guess we're going to wrap up. So thanks for listening to the latest episode of Microbyte. I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog.
And I'm Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people that bite the hand that feeds IT.